ते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीशुक उवाच एवं संचोदितो विप्रायः मरुत्वं अहनद्रिपुं ब्रह्महत्याहते तस्मिन् अससादा वृषाकपिं श्रीशुक उवाच एवं संचोदितो विप्रायः मरुत्वं अहनद्रिपुं ब्रह्महत्याहते तस्मिन् अससादवृषाकपिम् Ladies, Shrishuk Vacha. Shri Shukadev Goswami said, Evam, thus, Sanchodita, being encouraged, Vipray, by the Brahmanas, Marutvam, Indra, Ahanat, killed, Ripum, his enemy, Vritrasura, Brahmahatya, the sinful reaction for killing a Brahmana, Hate, was killed, Tasmin, when he, Vritrasura, Asasada, approached, Vrishakapin, Indra, who is also named Vrishakapi. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, encouraged by the words of the sages, Indra killed Vritrasura, and when he was killed, the sinful reaction for killing a Brahmana, Brahmahatya, certainly took shelter of Indra. Purport. After killing Vritrasura, Indra could not surpass the Brahmahatya, the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmana. Formerly, he had killed one Brahmana, Vishvarupa, out of circumstantial anger. But this time, following the advice of the sages, he killed another Brahmana purposely. Therefore, the sinful reaction was greater than before. Indra could not be relieved from the reaction simply by performing sacrifices for atonement. He had to undergo a severe series of sinful reactions. And when he was freed by such suffering, the Brahmanas allowed him to perform the horse sacrifice. The planned execution of sinful deeds on the strength of chanting the holy name of the Lord or undergoing prayaschita, atonement, cannot give relief to anyone, even to Indra or Nahusha. Nahusha was officiating for Indra while Indra, absent from heaven, was going here and there to gain release from his sinful reactions. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshirum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavanishwari Vrishavanusute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vacharam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinataranam. So Indra killed Vritrasura, being encouraged by the words of the sages. One may say, why he has to pay reaction if he was following the advice of the sages? The thing is, he took the final decision. I mean, we may be influenced by others to do something, but it is our final decision to do it or not. Isn't it? Same way, a king may have many advisor ministers. I may advise different way. That's their duty. But the king has the responsibility of taking action, taking decision. This should be done or not should be done. This is his final decision. He may hear different advice from different people. But his responsibility, the decision he decides to make. In this case, same thing. Although Indra killed Vritrasura following this advice of the sages, still he has to pay the reaction, not the sages. Not the sages. They may advise, okay, do, because this is good for everyone. For us also, this Vritrasura, you know, is a great huge demon. It's going to cause great chaos and so many problems, killing so many people. It's a huge demon. So please, you kill him. You are powerful in us. And even, not only the sages advise that, even the Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, advise that. That he use the bones of Dadichi, approach Dadichi, ask for the boon, for his bones, the boon of his bones, to make this powerful weapon to kill Vritrasura. There's no other way. So see how many things has to be done to accomplish something. A very difficult task. to kill such a huge gigantic demon. But the problem is that he was not just, he wasn't externally only outwardly a demon. He was not only a Brahmana, but also a pure Vaishnava. That happened to be in the body of a demon. In any other Purana, you don't find Vritrasura being named as a Vaishnava or Brahmana even, just a demon. Only in the Bhagavatam you find this very clear explanation that Vritrasura was a Mahabhagavat. And how Indra himself found that? By hearing what Vritrasura had to say in the battlefield. And this is in chapter 11, text 24-25. Very beautiful verses that Vritrasura recited, and we are going to read them again because they are very beautiful. Vritrasura told Indra, Aham hare tava padai kamula dasanudaso bhavitasmi bhuya manasmareta supater gunamste grinita vakkarma karotu kaya. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. So just see, he's expressing his eagerness to become dasanudasa, servant of the servant. This is Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Nudas. So this is very much appreciated by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, that Vritrasura, although in the body of a demon, he expressed such high elevated feeling of hankering to serve the Lord's devotees. To serve the Lord in the association of devotees by serving them, by pleasing them. And that's what Lord Krishna told Arjuna in the Adi Purana. Those who say that they are my servants, they are not my servant. But those who say they are servant of my servant, they are actually my servants. So this is the conclusion of Vaishnava philosophy. To become a servant of the servant of the servant. And in the next verse, he said, Nanaka prishtam nacha paramishtyam na sarvabhaumam narasadipatyam na yoga siddhir apunarbhavam va samanjasa tva virahaya kankshe. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka the heavenly planets or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. So, this is pure devotee. Pure devotee doesn't have material desires. His only desire is to serve the Lord and His servants. That is only desire. That is symptom of a pure devotee. So here Vritrasura expressing, I have no desire to enjoy even Brahmalok. Even Dhruvalok, which is a local Vaikuntha planet, I don't want to even go there. I just want to serve you, to take shelter at your lotus feet, in the association of your servant, to serve them. So that's definitely very high feelings of devotional service that Vritrasura was expressing, even in a gigantic, you know, huge body like a demon, very fearsome demon, and still he was speaking like that. And so Indra was completely, you know, bewildered. I mean, well, he was completely struck with wonder. That's how such a demon be great Vaishnava. So of course, then in the next chapters, even Parikshit Maharaj was surprised and asked Shukadev Goswami, how this possible? This demon is a great devotee. Then the story of Chitraketu, you know, came and everything. So anyway, we shall be very fearful to commit sinful activities because we have to pay reaction. It's not that we shall think, oh, because I'm devotee, Krishna will protect me from reaction. Indra was also devotee. Isn't he? He's also Vaishnava. He also had darshan of Krishna in the Govardhan Lila. Has Krishna's blessing. So still, even if a devotee, if you perform sinful action, has to suffer the reaction. We should not be careful not to think that we are above that. No, we are not. And when Prabhupada visited our temple, Venezuela, one in the garden, he was speaking about those things. He said that this material world is so dangerous. Even while walking, if you step on an ant, it will be noted, this man killed an ant. You have to suffer for this. We were all very shocked to hear this. But Prabhupada said, if you walk to serve Krishna, then Krishna will reduce your suffering. But you can't avoid. This material world is a place of suffering. I was talking yesterday with the godbrother, and he was expressing all his problems and, you know, why Krishna is chastising me like this. I told him, Prabhu, Krishna is not chastising you. You are chastising yourself. We are chastising ourselves. We are creating our own happiness or our distress in this material world. Krishna is not responsible for that. Don't think because I am devotee, Krishna has to protect me from all my suffering. No, devotee doesn't think like that. Devotee think in a different way. What is that verse in the 10th canto by Lord Brahma? Tattenu kampam shushamikshamano bunjane vatma kritam vipakam ridbhakpa buribhidhannamaste jivetayo muktipade sadayabhak. A devotee always is expecting Krishna's mercy. And even suffering is he accept as Krishna's mercy, because the devotee should think that I should be suffering even more for my past sinful activities. But Krishna is so kind, he's reducing what I'm supposed to be suffering. That's the way we should think. Not that why Krishna is chastising me like this. I am a devotee. Why Krishna is making me suffer? Krishna doesn't make anybody suffer. We create our own happiness, our own suffering. And why there is suffering in this world? Just to help us understand that this material world is not our real home. That this is a mistake we did by coming to this world. By becoming pessimistic. Prabhupada said, the more we become pessimistic about this material world, the more we make advancement in the spiritual life. Of course, some people, you know, may disagree with us. What we care, you know, we care what Prabhupada said, what the Shastra said. Some people try to adjust their mind so they can be happy in the material world. Just the desire to be happy in the material world is a contamination of the heart, is an anartha. We should not have such an aspiration that I want to be happy in the material world. That's not possible. No matter what we do, what we try, there is always the duality of happiness and distress in this material world. That's something that can't be avoided. Even Indra, the heavenly king, he has to suffer the reaction of his sinful activities. Even by following the advice, not only the sages, even the Supreme Lord, he still has to suffer for his sinful activity of killing a Brahmana, Vaishnava. He has to. So, Indra was wandering here and there, trying to escape, you know, this reaction who appeared in a, personified in a very in the form of a very ugly old woman, with full of blood, and her breath smelled fish smell, and was all over, you know, was horrible, and he was running here and there. And finally, he went to the Manasarovara lake and took shelter in a stem of a lotus. For 1,000 years, he had to stay there, performing austerity to be relieved from his sinful reaction. And he took shelter of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, because she lives in the stem of a lotus. So by doing that, he was relieved after so many years from sinful reaction. Meantime, Nahusha was asked to be Indra. to take the post of Indra, just for the time that Indra was absent from his position. Nahusha was an earthly king, but by his tapasya, and you know, he was elevated to the heavenly kingdom. He was a Rajarshi, he was this royal sage. And when he took that position, you know, he was qualified to perform that responsibility as Indra. But with high position also may come pride. So he became very proud of his position, of his power. He got all the mystic powers of all the demigods. So when he became proud, he started to look at Sachi, Indra's wife, with lusty eyes. He said, if I am Indra, she shall be my wife. I shall enjoy her. So he proposed to her, you know, I am now Indra, you must, you know, be with me. Be my wife now. Since your husband left, now you have me. I am Indra now. Of course, she was a chaste lady, she didn't agree, but she was always harassing her. So she asked the one sage for advice. And the sage advised her, okay, tell him like this. So she, next time he was, you know, proposing to her again, she told him, okay, I will accept you, but you come such and such day to my house, but you have to come on a palanquin which is being held by Brahmins. They have to carry your palanquin. I want only pure Brahmins to carry your palanquin. Oh, that's not a big problem. They are all my servants. I'm Indra. So he came. He forced the Brahmin to carry his palanquin. They are not supposed to do that. That's an offense. So he made an offense to the Brahmanas. Not only that, he was so lusty, he was like trying to hurry them up. He kicked one sage, Agastya Muni, with his foot. Hurry up. And the sage became very disturbed and he cursed him. That was the whole plan. So he cursed him to become a snake. Since you are envious of the Brahmins, kicking them like that, like a snake, then you must become a snake. So he prayed, you know, please, you know, forgive me on this. Still, okay, you will be relieved if you meet a pure devotee and hear his spiritual discourse about spiritual life, you will be relieved. And also, you will easily get your food. You will overpower any living entity you capture very easily. But that's not the end of the story. When the Pandavas were in exile in the forest, Bhima, wandering in the forest, he met this serpent, huge, gigantic serpent. And she was hungry. She immediately captured Bhima. And Bhima, of course, is very powerful. He has the strength of 10,000 men. But he could not release himself. He said, how is it possible? So he asked the serpent, who are you? He said, I am Nahusha. I was cursed to become a snake. Now, by destiny, you came to me as my meal today. And so Bhima said, well, what can I do if that is the will of the Lord? Not even... But I'm sorry for my mother and my brothers, you know, Yudhishthir, he needs my strength to fight our enemies, but if that's my destiny, there is any other way that I can be relieved from this? He said, well, only if a saintly king answer my questions about spiritual life, I will be relieved from my serpent body and you also will be relieved. So Yudhishthir Maharaj started to see some bad omens. His left side was to start to tremble, his left eye and left arm, and jackals, you know, so many things he was seeing. So something must be wrong. Where is Bhima? I don't see him. So he went to find him. And when he found him like that, trapped by the snake coils, there was a conversation between him and the snake. And he answered all the, you know, question. Very high question about One question the snake asked was, how do you know who is a Brahmin and what is the purpose of all knowledge? And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, you know a Brahmin by his qualities, such as honesty, forgiveness, self-control, religiosity, and knowing the Shastras. But the serpent said, but I may see those qualities in other people who are not Brahmins. So how is that? And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, any person who has those qualities, no matter what his birth is, he's a Brahmin. So it's not a question of birthright, but by developing the qualities. And the ultimate purpose of knowledge is to know the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of God. So in this way, they had very nice, that's a Mahabharata, all this conversation, and then the end of which, Nahusha was relieved from his snake body, and took a heavenly form and went to the heavenly planets. So, all these pastimes is just to teach us how dangerous it is to commit offense to a Vaishnava. It's so dangerous. So much so that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared to Hastimata, a crazy mad elephant that enters a garden and destroys all the garden. The same way, this aparad, Vaishnava aparad, is very, very dangerous thing to do. We should be very, very careful. And we should not think that only this refers only to elevated Vaishnava, advanced, no. Even to very neophyte Vaishnava, still if you offend, you have to suffer. There is one nice pastime of Rupa Goswami, which very nicely explained this. Rupa Goswami, before writing his books, he will enter into Samadhi and enter the Leela of the Lord, and everything he will see in that Leela, he will write, down. So, one time he was sitting like that, in full trance. One Vaishnava, which has some body deformity, when he was walking, his body will move in a very funny way, So, when he passed, he came to greet Rupa Goswami. But Rupa Goswami was with closed eyes, but he started to laugh. So this Vaishnava thought that Rupa Goswami is laughing at me. So he went, disturbed from there. Immediately when that happened, Rupa Goswami, his meditation broke. And he tried to meditate again in the past times of the Lord. He could not. No matter how hard he tried, he could not. So he went to his elder brother, Sanatan Goswami, like his guru, and he asked him for advice. I don't know why this is happening to me. I can't meditate on the Leela of the Lord. Then Sanatan Goswami said, maybe you have offended some Vaishnava, unknowingly. And how can I find out who's that Vaishnava and to ask forgiveness if I don't know who is he? Sanatan Goswami told him, you invite all the Vaishnavas for prasad, make a big feast for everyone. And the one who doesn't come, that's the one who feels offended. That's the way you will know. So in that way, he found out who was that Vaishnava because he didn't come. So he went to him with prasad, I'm very sorry if I offended you, please forgive me, I don't know. He said, I went to see you and you was laughing at. I thought you was laughing at me. No, please forgive me. I wasn't laughing at you. I will tell you. I don't like to disclose these things, but since this happened, I have to tell you the truth. What happened is that I was meditating on the past times of the Lord, and I was witnessing how Radharani and the gopis were picking flowers to make garland for Krishna. And Radharani was trying to get a branch of a tree full of nice, beautiful flowers, but was a little high. So Krishna was hiding on that tree, and with his foot he pushed the branch down so Radharani can catch the branch and to get the flowers. But when Radharani caught the branch, Krishna took off his foot and the branch went up, but Radharani jumped also with the branch up, and that made me laugh like anything. So when he heard that, please forgive me. Oh, you are great Vaishnava, Rupa Goswami. Please, you forgive me for thinking like that. So they pay obeisance, embrace each other like that, very nicely. And everything was... So just see, even great, great Vaishnava like Rupa Goswami is teaching us by this pastime, you know, how careful, even unknowingly, if you want to speak of knowingly, we should be very careful not to offend any devotee, any Vaishnava. Of course, it is said to call a spade is not an offense, or to call a thief is not an offense. That's true. Still, we should not speak about it unnecessarily. We should not make a gossip up of it. You know, a devotee is not happy to speak about the misdeed of other Vaishnava. He's not happy to speak or hear about it, even if it is true. If it's necessary to, because of some reason, to speak about it, okay, you have to do it. But it's not just to enjoy talking about it, or make it an object of gossip or something. No. Also, in that book, Harinam Chintamani, by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that offense to the Vaishnava also, if you speak about the misdeed of a Vaishnava that he already overcome, that happened some time ago, but now he overcame this difficulty, he's all right now. But if you mention that unnecessarily, then that's also offense. Just see. Like, there is one devotee in Mexico, he likes to criticize everybody, you know. Every devotee, he likes to. He has even a small pamphlet like that, and he speaks about everybody, you know, problems. Doesn't matter, very personal. He gets very personal with names and everything. So I was talking to him one day, and I told him, Prabhu, this is not good, you know, to do this thing. He said, why? This is the truth. I'm saying just the truth. I told him, what about if you make mistake? You may say something sometime which is not true. Then what will happen to you? You will have to suffer reaction. And not only that, even by saying the truth, you will suffer reaction also. You say, why is that? Is it because in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says the austerities of speech is not only to speak the truth, but your speech shall be for the benefit of everyone. So if you are saying something for the benefit of everyone, and I don't see how it will be beneficial to hear about others, you know, misdeeds or mistakes. We have to try to look at our own mistakes also, our own, you know, to correct our own mind. And I told him that in the Veda there is a story of one Brahmana who was always addicted to say the truth, which is the duty of a Brahmana, of course. But one day, some family was running from thieves, and this family passed in front of the house of this Brahmana, you know. And after sometime, the thieves were searching for them. And they asked the Brahmin, have you seen a family passing through here? He said, yes, I saw. Which road they took, the right one or the left one? Oh, they took the right one. Okay. So they reached the family and killed all of them and steal all their money. When this Brahmin died, he went to Yamaraj. And Yamaraj told him, because you said the truth, now you are going to hell. Just see, because by saying the truth you harm this people, this family, now you have to suffer in hell because of it. Just see, I mean, it's not just to say the truth is always good, sometimes it is not. See, so we have to, you know, to pray. Prabhupada, once the devotee asked Prabhupada what we will do, how we take decisions, sometimes it's difficult. Prabhupada said, you ask for Krishna to give you intelligence. To pray to Krishna, give his intelligence. How to take proper action. Because sometimes it's difficult to know in daily practical life. Of course, we always take advice from Prabhupada himself to give us the example. Sometimes, although he didn't need it to, sometimes he take as the advice of his own disciples, just to hear their opinion. You know, even Lord Krishna himself will ask Uddhava give advice. He didn't need to, but you know, that's the teaching. Anyway, we'll stop here. Anybody has any question? Yes, Prabhu. Madam Mohan.
In this particular situation, when he started the battle with Vritasura, he hadn't spoken like this yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he was following the decision of the sages. Mm-hmm. So in the middle of the battle, when he heard him speak these two verses, he should have just stopped. I mean, how would it have... in the middle, you would have reconsidered. This isn't a demon.
He had to do it. He had to do it. Sometimes a person is forced by circumstances, you know, to act in not a pleasing way, to perform his duty. Indra's duty was to kill Vritrasura. But he was unhappy about it. That's the point. That's the point. I mean, that's the symptom of great personality. When he does something wrong, although what is duty to do it, he feels bad about it. He feels unhappy. You see? As a devotee, doesn't justify his wrong actions. Oh no, I did it because of this and this and that and that. No. The devotee feels, yes, I did something wrong. I'm very sorry. You know? That's the attitude should be. See? So Indra, being great personality, he felt like that. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, this is a very unusual circumstance, because you could also say, well, you know, if you're a Brahmana, why you're engaged in battle? You know, because that happened with Dronacharya and a few other Brahmanas,
yes.
Parshuram and so forth. So, but I think it's a lesson for us to learn not to offend a Brahmana. See, are the dangers of offending a Brahmana, really.
Mm.
Because, you know, Indra had to fight him. He was leading the demons. Had Indra stopped, then they would have killed Indra and the demigods. See? And so Lord Vishnu didn't want that to happen, you see?
Yes,
so, but it's, you know, on a higher level, it's a lesson to be learned there, the danger of killing a Brahmana. See,
yes, definitely.
The other story you were saying about Nahusha, really, that's very interesting, and we should make very serious note, you know, because it's been happening often even within our community, really. I mean, it's a truth, but I have to put a straw in my mouth and say it, really, because I could commit aparatu. You know, the dangers of like going with other's wife, that's a very serious offense, really, but yet we make the mistake constantly, so we should make a very, you know, take a strong note of that here, you know, and you know, even if we have friends and God brothers that has the tendency, or is, you know, let them understand the seriousness of this.
Yes, definitely, something completely wrong. Everybody knows. Yes. Yes.
You were saying, and it's also mentioned here, how Indra was acting under the advice of the sages and also Lord Vishnu.
Yes.
I guess that would be different from a student acting under the direction of the master or the teacher. Mm. The teacher says, you know, do this, and he goes out and do it.
Mm.
Then he does not get the reaction, but the master gets
that's
the
even
reaction.
That's even incorrect. And the story of that... explain that as Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, he disobeyed his spiritual master, Sukracharya, because he understood he is wrong. He's advising me against the devotional service of the Lord. So how can I do something that is against the Shastra, against the devotional service of the Lord? Then he's not a true spiritual master. Then it is not offense to disobey him. See? I mean, we should surrender to the spiritual master with our intelligence. We shall not surrender our intelligence, but surrender through our intelligence. If the spiritual master deviate from devotional service and instruct the student, lose intelligence. That surrender through our intelligence. If the spiritual master deviate from devotional service and instruct the student, do something against the principles of devotional service, the student has all the right to disagree with that. He doesn't pay reaction for that. But it is said, if the teacher gives some wrong teaching and the student follow, both of them go to hell. That's in the Shastra, what does the Shastra say? Yes, Prabhu.
Oh, me. But Sukracharya did lament. He lamented for a long, long time.
Yes.
Of his own mistake. In Nahusha's case, we also find in the ninth canto Bhagavatam, It says that actually if Nahusha, these things, the problem is the beginning of Indra's not seeing the divine will of Krishna in the background of everything that exists.
Yes.
So that's the difference between Shakam Bhakta and the Uttam Bhakta. Why Prabhupada said that he was not a Uttam Bhakta or great Vaishnava? Because he doesn't see the divine will of Krishna in the back of everything that exists. If he knew that or realized that, then he would not ask for protection at all.
Yes.
Because he is always protected.
That's correct.
So the Nahusha's case also, we find Prabhupada give a whole purport in the beginning of 9th chapter. That also this has to happen because so that Indra come back to his position.
Yes.
Otherwise, who is going to move Nahusha?
Yes, correct.
So everything is Krishna's behind. Everything is automatically perfect.
Not even a blade of grass moves without Krishna's will. That's the conclusion. Yes, correct. But still, free will is there. Every person has to take responsibility for his action. Finally. Yes, Mataji? Yes. Can you please give the microphone to me?
In relation to what you said about not following the order of the spiritual master, it seems to me from an experience that I had with Srila Prabhupada that that doesn't always apply, and it also depends on the level of advancement of the student. Because there was an incident, I've told this story before, in New York, where one person who was in charge to some extent, somehow or other, was giving instructions that were contrary to Prabhupada's instructions. And it went on for quite some time, and ultimately that person was removed from position, and there was a whole big thing. But Prabhupada reacted differently to the different devotees, because he said that the devotees who were new, the younger devotees who followed the instructions, appreciated the fact that they stayed in the temple and they did their service, and even though the instructions were confusing, they followed them. But he was furious with some of the leaders because they should have known better and they should have taken action immediately. Instead, they waited, and ultimately they did take action, but it was, you know, a little bit down the line.
Yeah, I know the story. Yes, thank you for reminding us. It's very important instruction that the more experienced disciples, they should immediately take action when something goes off, you know, goes wrong. Prabhupada said, if somebody is in ignorance and sees something in ignorance, he doesn't react. But if somebody is in goodness and sees something in ignorance, he will react immediately. And you know when Prabhupada said that? While walking in Mayapur, the bathroom was dirty. So Prabhupada asked, why bathrooms are dirty like that? The leader were giving different excuses. No, the Bengali, they don't know how to use this Western bathroom, this and that. Why you don't teach them, Prabhupada? Anyway, Prabhupada said like that, if you are in ignorance, you don't react when you see something in ignorance. But if you are in goodness, you will react immediately. So that's definitely a duty of the advanced student to immediately have done something. And this mistake we see, you know, sometimes in our movement, that we don't react. We just let things go. I don't want to be involved, Prabhu. I don't want to make offense. But it's our responsibility. See Indra. He has to take action, even knowing that he will pay reaction, but was his duty to do it on behalf of the sages and the demigods.
One of my students was talking to me and wondering what the difference between Indra and Arjuna was, because Indra found himself in a difficulty. He was given advice. He carried it out. He killed a Brahmin, and then he had to suffer reaction. But Arjuna also found himself in difficulty, and he followed the advice. And did he also suffer?
No. There is a difference between Indra and Arjuna, because Arjuna is a pure devotee of the Lord. Indra is a Sakama Bhakta. He's a devotee also, but not on the same level of Arjuna, because Arjuna is an eternal associate of the Lord. He's an eternal liberated soul. And he was following the direct direction of Krishna without any false ego being involved in that. So when there is some ego there, there is some reaction also.
Would you say that the fact that Krishna gave him instruction, we'll go get the bones of Didachi and build this thing and then you'll win, was kind of like, you know, a parent who sees a child kind of going to do the something no matter what, and he's, you know, determined to get what he wants. He says, okay, well, as long as you're going to do it, then, you know, do it this way.
Not only that, it was actually necessary to do it, because otherwise this demon, you know, so-called demon, Vritasara, was going to kill too many demigods in the battlefield. And there is no one who could stop him but Indra. So there was something necessary to take action, and sometimes, you know, you have to be a little heavy and you have to, you know, suffer a little reaction for that, but still it is your duty to do it. That's the lesson. We should not give up our duty just because they are difficult. Or you have to be strong in taking decisions. Otherwise you can't be a leader. If you can't do like that, if you can't act like that. This reminds me also, one devotee in Venezuela, he had some disagreement with the temple president about something. The temple president asked him to cut some trees in the garden. He didn't agree to do that. So he left. And he went to England to meet Prabhupada there, to ask Prabhupada. Prabhupada, if the authority is wrong, should I follow him? And Prabhupada said, authority is never wrong. Prabhupada answered like that. I mean, what is the meaning of that? You know, for us, I mean, we speak about authority sometimes very lightly, you know. You know, temple command is authority, you know, the kitchen, whatever is authority. But philosophically speaking, the authorities are only three. Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. These are the three authorities. Of course, if the person is Sadhu, then we, of course, that's also an authority. But the meaning that a Sadhu never go against the Shastra. Otherwise, how he can be a Sadhu? See? So that's the point. That it's not somebody devotee, he can take any decision no matter what, and you have to follow blindly. No. We should not be blind followers. We have to see. This is according to the Shastra. According to what the Guru said, then it's all right. Otherwise, not. Yes?
So how do you balance then, not committing an offense, but at the same time you have to be willing to speak out if you see something in ignorance or something is wrong? What if you think it's wrong, but then later you find you are the one who is wrong?
Oh, then you have to be very sure before you speak. That's simple. You have to find out first from other devotees who have more experience, and also from the Shastra, before, you know, giving a statement. You know, we have to be careful not to give statement very lightly like that. We have to first be completely sure that what we are saying is correct. Then we can say.
Also, there are grievance channels, right? You you have a grievance, you tell your, you know, the
command. Yes, of course. We go to some higher.
If ultimately, they don't agree with you, then you have to accept that. You know, it's either not the time or you are wrong.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Yes, Mataji.
When I hear this story about Vikrasura and how he, you know, it wasn't obvious that he was a devotee. You know, he was like, you know, it was hidden, right?
Of course.
So the lesson to me is that we really shouldn't offend anyone. I mean, I get, you know, that there's levels of offenses, but the lesson to me is that we may be face to face with someone and we think, oh, they're just a meat-eating karmi. And in actuality, who they are is a great devotee.
Yeah, it could be, yes.
So it's just a lesson to me to be careful, not just in relation to other devotees, but even, you know, non-devotees who are just people waiting to hear about Krishna and waiting to, you know, reveal who they really are.
Yeah, right. We have to, that's the duty of Madhyamadhikari, to make distinction between devotees and innocent and also envious people. There is a difference. We have to make distinction, you know. Innocent people, you show, you know, mercy by speaking about Krishna. Envious people, you avoid. And devotees, you try to make friendship with devotees and try to develop our prem or love for Krishna. That's the duty of Madhyamadhikari. Otherwise, how we can help others if it doesn't know how to make distinctions? That's a very important point, yes. So we should not take things externally. It's not that just because I put on tilak, I become a devotee automatically. No. I mean, Prabhupada said a heavy statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita that in this movement, there are demons dressed as devotees. That's a heavy statement for Prabhupada to say like that. So that means we should not be sentimental. We should be with open eyes. Yes.
And it also seems that, you know, it is important to speak out if you see something's wrong, because for a long time in our movement, under those same premises, people didn't speak up, you know, maybe when they saw something, because they felt like, well, it's offensive. It just seems, you know, it has to be done in the right mentality. It may be okay to say something if the mentality is for, you know, even the person who's committing some improper activity, it's being done for their benefit. It seems like even then there's a place for criticism if it's done in the proper mentality.
Yes, correct. To clarify things, to say the truth, to be honest, you know, to help others understand the reality. With those ideas in mind, if one speaks out, then it's all right. So, and it should be done. I mean, we should be courage enough, you know, to speak the truth when it is necessary to do it for the benefit of others. If some people are getting confused about this is right or this is wrong, then it's our duty to say what is the truth. It is our duty. Okay. So, all right. Thank you very much, everyone. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi.